the song Wish You Were Here, which opens the record, is that's kind of a personal one. It was written basically as a blues tune, and I changed the whole arrangement to make it a little, you know, give a little more R&B spin for the record and make it a little more contemporary and Europoppy at the same time.
This is J.D. Doyle, and that's Michael Holland, and I've been a fan of his for, oh, at least a dozen years. And as you might guess from hearing him introduce the first song, I've got an interview with Michael, and I'm very pleased to share it. First, a quick bio. He spent most of the last 20-some years in New York City and has released 4 solo CDs, one with a trio, and more recently has been involved in a number of musical projects. One high-profile one was in 2011, when he provided the orchestrations and vocal arrangements for the Broadway revival of Godspell. And he's also well-known to the New York cabaret crowds for his show with Karen Mack called Gas Hole. Various permutations of that show have run for 12 years, and he's called it a celebration of the best while preferring the worst of pop music. I've seen him live, and what his solo albums unfortunately do not get across is just how witty and funny he is. So maybe you'll get a little of that from the interview. And I started with the most recent album called Beach Toys Won't Save You, and we'll get to that title in a little while. But first, about the CD in general.
It's a pretty big mishmash of pop styles, and I know that people always say that when they don't know how to categorize their music, but because I grew up pretty much listening to nothing but Queen, so when you bought one of their albums, you got 57 styles in 40 minutes, and I thought that was the way you were supposed to do it, so that's what I do. So it's kind of cool because we have, you know, big strings and horns and big vocal arrangements, and but there's also rock guitars and there's big drums and there's dance tracks and programming and keyboards, and it's all over the map, but it holds together as a big sort of like, you know, contemporary pop piece. And it's a really upbeat, fun record. It's kind of cool because my following these days tends to be pretty much of a mix too. I've got, you know, all kinds of demographics, and they're young and old and gay and straight and human and not so much, because I'm in New York, so you know anything goes. And it's nice. So there's a little something for everybody on it.
Michael, who is your audience, and are you out as a musician?
My audiences all pretty much know who I am. I'm definitely an out musician, although I don't consider what I do as gay music so much, because I don't really know what that means. aside from the two Cher records that I own. I don't know how to make gay music. I mean, I don't shy away from who I am. But every single song I write is not about the gay experience, because that would even start to bore me, never mind the fans. Although it is in there. I mean, it's definitely, I don't hide from it. I think it's important as a musician and a writer to try and communicate the human condition, I guess. I hate using the high school English terms, for lack of a better way of putting it. And so, you know, yeah, that comes into play, but I mean, everybody's been in love and everybody's gone through certain things. And I'm much more interested in even though it may be from a queer perspective, which I have no problem with, and apparently neither does my audience, I don't want to make that the exclusive, you know, perspective of what I'm talking about.
Is there a song that you've written of which you're the most proud?
To that end, I mean, I don't really know that there's one particular song I have that I would say is, you know, my best work. I don't know, because I'm always working and always writing, and the songs are, even though I am trying to sort of, you know, communicate on a bigger scale, it's still a really personal thing. And songs are, that's true, they are kind of like your kids, so you don't want to pick a favorite, you know, especially if there's one in the room and there's one sitting right in front of me open right now. So I don't know that there's one I like better than others. I've had certain ones where I thought, okay, this is it. This is what I've set out to do, and I'm never going to top this. And then the next day, hated it so much. So you never know. As an artist, you're just too crazy to be able to evaluate your own work like that, I think.
Tell me about your songwriting process.
I have a bunch of different ways of writing. Usually what happens is I sit down. It depends on what I'm trying to do. But if I don't have anything in particular that I have to write, I just feel like writing something. I'll sit around with a guitar or a piano and just sort of noodle around for a while and maybe come up with a phrase that I start singing along with it. Nonsense syllables usually, but then that sounds like words, and then that reminds me of something, and off I go. But unless, you know, if I have something specific I have to write, it's a very different thing. The music tends to come a little bit sooner these days, though that changes too. It really depends on the project. As far as the pop songs on this record, a lot of them, I've got a catalog of many, many songs, probably about 500 of them, because I've been writing for a long time. And so when I'm doing an album, and you can tell how old I am because I still call them albums, but they are. You know what? I have to talk about this, even though I probably don't have time. Albums were albums way after they were still really albums, if that makes any sense. When they first made albums, they were books. They were coffee table books with 78s in them, just like photo albums or books. And then when they came out with the LPs, they still called them albums. So I can call a CD an album if I want. So that said, I'm off the hook. Usually what happens is I'll go through the vaults and I'll find a bunch of songs that seem to be able to live together and get along. And if I need to fill in some space, I'll write something new or rewrite something old. But it's a really fluid kind of process.
How is this album different from your last one, Darkness Falls, and what is the significance of the title of the new CD?
This record is a bit of a departure from the last one, Darkness Falls. It was a much darker piece, as the title might suggest. It was a little moodier. It was really raw and personal. This record's very personal also. It's like the happy younger brother of Darkness Falls. It's a lot more upbeat, and even though there's a few moments of utter Holland despair on it, but it's a much sunnier kind of thing. The weird thing is, as far as like with the title to the record, Beach Toys Won't Save You, I was years ago visiting in Kansas City, Missouri, and it was summertime, and so it was really hot one day. We went to one of the little brown man-made lakes they have there for recreation. And at the concession stand, there was a water safety poster with a cartoon of a little boy in a green inflatable seahorse in obvious distress on the high seas. And the caption on it was, Beach Toys Won't Save You. And I vowed then and there that the name of my fourth CD was going to be Beach Toys Won't Save You, no matter what. So that's basically what happened. As it turns out, I had found a lot of songs that had sort of a nautical or, coastal motif to them. So I was able to sort of weave them together and not really a narrative. It's not a concept album. I mean, really, who smokes that much pot anymore? But there is a bit of a through line. There is a theme. So it's, you know, there's a lot of like beachy sort of stuff. It's funny because when you put these records together, you always decide which, you know, oh, this is the hit. This is the track that they're all going to be calling me about or emailing me about. And the one that I picked, which I'm not going to name, so far has gotten virtually no attention whatsoever. But two tracks, which I really liked and didn't think were going to go over so well, have really been coming back to haunt me. One of which is Beatrice's Boyfriend, which is, it's a really old tune. I wrote this song back in, I hate to say it, but back in 1984, I think, or five. And it was always my intention to do sort of a Beach Boys parody of it. I mean, on it. So I wanted to keep, you know, capture that sort of sound and use those harmonies and be able to, you know, do all that overdubbing, which I love so much. But I also wanted to make it sort of a, you know, a twisted kind of story, which is why Beatrice's is sort of ill-fated. But adding the dance section at the end, which it has now, was a new development that happened when I was putting the album together. I came up with that idea. And people have been really responding to it, I guess because it shifts gears so strongly. And it is a really, it's a fun track.
And from the album, Beach Toys Won't Save You, is Beatrice's Boyfriend.
Thank you.
And the other one that's been getting a lot is Firefly 9, which I kind of thought would not be the case because it's a little bit longer, and it's the whole record, it's the most serious number. In a way, it's almost a little bit of an indictment of, you know, of our sort of partying gay male culture, which, you know, is fun, sure. But when it becomes a way of life for people, I think that priorities get sort of, you know, shoved in the, on the back burner. And that's what it's kind of about. But I also wanted to make it a really sort of heroic sounding kind of like, you know, big dance party anthem-y thing towards the end, especially because I think it paints the irony of it a little bit more. So basically, if you want to look at the lyrics and go, oh, OK, this is really like, you know, he's really making a point here. There's that. But if you also just kind of want to walk out humming the tune, that's there too, which is a little bit twisted, I realize. But, you know, you're trying to please everybody, I guess. And it has been, it's been really working. People have really bought it. I was afraid it was going to be a little too, I don't know, not pretentious, but maybe a little too ambitious for a pop album. And it seems to be really hitting a chord with people. So I'm very, very happy about that. Really gratified.
Now I'm so tired.
Firefly 9 by Michael Holland. One of my favorite songs on this album is Boys Say Go. Could you talk about it?
Boys Say Go was written a while ago, too. I think I was living in Provincetown at the time, so this would have been the late 90s. And I thought it would be fun to write a song about, you know, sort of adolescent rebellion, but have the twist be that our adolescent rebel is a tranny. And I thought that'd be kind of fun. And the song just, it was one of those songs that just poured out in about 10 minutes. It was like, as soon as I hit on the idea and had the sort of, you know, the refrain, it just poured right out.
They taught you how to sit up straight, to be polite and not too late. And now the rest,
and now the rest,
and now the rest is up to you. Mama fixed her gaze and says it's just a phase that you're going through. Daddy whispers, I'll be damned if the child is mine. You've thrown away your jeans and sneakers and grown into a lush young creature. And now you're dressed.
And now you're dressed.
And now you're dressed up to the night.
Daddy,
why you gotta run around the town like that? Why you gotta run around the town like that? Why you gotta run around the town like that? But the boys say go. Boys say go on. He's working as far back downtown. He's got a career and some contraband beer in the trunk. He left home in 94. He's your eternal flame du jour. And he says he loves you.
Says he loves you.
Says he loves you when he's drunk. Why you gotta run around the town like that? Why you gotta run around the town like that?
As far as It's Too Late for a Summer Love, I just wanted to make a big sort of disco tune. I hadn't done one on any of the other albums. The closest I had done was probably Joey Stefano's Dead on Darkness Falls. But that was, you know, a little more Euro poppy and a little electronica stuff going on in it. And this one is a little more straight ahead. I wanted Kylie to sing it, but she won't return my calls. So I did it instead. And it's really a totally invented story. But I mean, come on, how far do you have to go? You know, I've spent quite a bit of time on Fire Island, and I've seen a thing or two. So, you know, I know how these summer relationships work. I had a couple of them myself in my day, you know, and in Provincetown. And so it's sort of about that kind of like, well, that the party season's over, but, you know. So that's that one. It's just a, you know, just a big bid for my conquering the dance floor, which of course I can't go on because I can't dance myself. Don't ask me.
Comes one day and he steals your heart.
Ooh.
Okay, I've mentioned that I'm a longtime fan of Michael's music, so of course I was going to ask about earlier work. And in 1996, he released a CD called Thank You for the Afghan. And how could I resist a song called Surrender Dorothy?
That was, I think, the first tune I wrote when I got to Provincetown. It was, I think I had been, it's hard to remember, but I think I was kind of struggling with the whole idea of, okay, you know, I know I'm a gay artist, but I'm an artist who's gay, but am I a gay artist? And do I want to really publicize that? Things were pretty different, even like, you know, talking about 9 or 10 years ago than they are now. And so this was the first time I actually really kind of dealt with it on a record. It's a little evasive, but I mean, if you're in the club, you know what I'm talking about. It's sort of a, you know, welcome to the ranks, and don't pretend you're something you're not. And it was a real transitional piece for me. And that's another one that actually people still are singing around New York, and I think somebody recorded it, and so it still gets some play. So it's nice. It's nice that they're still, you know, that record came out in 96. It's nice that people are still banging the stuff around.
We want to welcome you, my dear. One little warning, should you call this home, you are not alone. And nobody keeps a secret here. We're all on the way, you're not some silly girl in a whirlwind of hopes and doubts and easy outs. But knowing you, that isn't too surprising. It's time to grow up and face the fact. Kansas is history, and here you are on a bright new start. Honey, there is no turning back. You know how the little people talk and laugh. You can't have it both ways, cause surely we know more than you let on. So much for compromising. There are no rainbows left to ride, no safety on the other side. The more you try to hide, the more we see. So you can click your shiny shoes, but we've all is the place where all your sadness ends, cause we are your friends. But happy to say you're one of us. Oh, it doesn't matter in the end, because if it does, why does no one care back over there? It's tough, but we all have to realize that there are no rainbows left to ride, for safety on the other side. The more you try to hide, the more they see. So you can click your shiny shoes, but they've all heard the news. Surrender, Dorothy. Here you fly so come back home down on the bar. Tell me why did you
Also from that album is Something's Bothering Davy.
Everybody in my family thinks it's autobiographical except myself. I thought it would be interesting to have this conversation between a father and son, but the father has no idea what's going on with the kid and just assumes he's withdrawn because he's in love with somebody and he's going through typical adolescent turmoil. And I think the kid's gay. People ask me, is he? And I said, I don't really know. I wrote this from the father's point of view. I don't know if he is. And they said, well, is he dead at the end? And I said, I don't know. That's why it's not resolved. You know, it's sort of a, what I wanted to do was make sort of a wake up call, like, you know, a sort of listen to your kids thing. And a really cool thing happened years ago with this tune. I was playing it at a place that's not around anymore in Manhattan called the Cottonwood Cafe. And this woman came up to me at the end with her friend, and they were visiting from Ohio, and they just happened to come into this show that I was in. And they said, you know, we do this every year. We take a vacation from our families, and we come in, and we just, like, they can't contact us, and we just stay in New York for a week, and then we go back. Yeah, I know. but then we go back home to Ohio, and they said, but we heard that song, and we're going to call home as soon as we get to the hotel to make sure everybody's okay. It was the most important song we've ever heard. And I didn't care if anybody else ever liked it from then on in. That was like, that's why I do what I do, you know, not just to get patted on the back, but you know, that people respond.
Davey's gone and locked himself in his room again. Must have had a bad little day at school. Tell me, Mother, why he seems to have so few friends. Sometimes other kids can be so cruel. Oh, 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 hey, hey, never joins the family around the TV these days. Never talks to friends on the telephone. Oh, lately I can't understand a single word he says. He's at that age when they're best left alone. Oh, oh, oh. It scared me half to death to think he's mine. Ha, la, 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 la. But I can't give advice, ignore one-sided conversations. These kids these days just grew up on their own. But something is bothering. And what he wears and makes himself so dark. Oh, scarce, it's almost like he'd like to disappear. Won't talk at all like it's my fault. I'm talking to a thick brick wall. Then all too soon or late, it's all too the damn door down. Don't know how much more your mother and I can bear. Yeah. Davey, oh God, mother, hurry, call 911. Listen to me, it's best that you stay out there. Something is bothering David. Something is bothering David.
I need to give some background information regarding the next song I asked Michael about. It's from his 1999 album, Darkness Falls, and the song is called Joey Stefano's Dead. And as Stefano has been dead since 1994, younger folks may not know of him. Stefano had strikingly good looks and was a very popular gay porn star in the early 1990s, making several dozen films in only a few years, up until his death of a drug overdose.
When I did Joey Stefano's Dead, you know, I wasn't really, I can't say I wasn't a fan of Joey's, because I do enjoy the man's work, but I don't think he was a cultural hero any more than I thought that, you know, it was brave of George Michael to come out. He didn't come out. He was, you know, he got caught. So I don't think of, you know, let's put him on the cover of The Advocate. He's a hero. You know what? Well, not so much. Love his stuff, but, you know, whatever. And similarly with Joey, it was like, okay, you know, I'm sorry the kid had a bad life. I'm sorry the kid couldn't get his act together. But he wasn't my hero for what he could do with a beer bottle any more than he was for, you know, accidentally killing himself. And I thought that because our culture celebrates sort of random celebrity like that, I thought it'd be interesting to write that song. However, I have had responses from people who actually knew Joey who say, you know, you sort of captured what he was about and it made me really sad. It made me miss him. It was a really beautiful tribute, which is kind of nice because I did want to, you know, sort of sarcastically make a point, but I didn't want to be disrespectful. And also, I've had people where I've played it in different parts of the country where they just laugh nonstop from beginning to end and said it was their favorite piece in the show. You just never know how you're going to touch them, I guess. Maybe that's the wrong way to put that. But that's, you know, it's sort of a byproduct of being a writer, I guess.
The perfect fantasy he was. Watch him go and give yourself a think of this tonight in bed. He lived on dreams and wonder bread and all. Yeah.
I'm next asked about a different project. In the late 90s, Michael was in a trio in Provincetown called Comfortable Shoes, comprised of Deborah Piccolo and Peter Donnelly. And that begat a CD in 1998 named Happy Joy. This was a bit lighter material, and included originals from each of them, cover songs, and medleys, and was a lot of fun. One of Michael's songs was called Atlantic Blue.
Atlantic Blue, the song I had on the Comfortable Shoes CD, Happy Joy, that was sort of vague on purpose. I saw a lot of people when I was living in Provincetown who would come, people who had like very normal lives. They weren't performers. They weren't artists. They were just, they were teachers, and they were, doctors and office workers and, you name it. And they would come in for their 1 week of vacation in Provincetown where they could be whoever they wanted to be. They didn't have to like conform to anybody else's standards or expectations when they came here. They could walk down the street holding hands with their partners, or they could, come and whatever, hook up and party or do whatever they wanted to do. And then when it was over, they had to go back to their other lives, and everything went back either into the closet or under the table, or however you want to put it. Some of these people were out, some of them weren't, but I thought, what is it really like to look so forward to coming here and then to have to leave? What is it like to have your memories of it for the rest of the year and the expectation of coming back? What is that all about? How do you get through? And so I wanted to try to capture that sort of thing in the piece.
Atlantic blue, how I long at night for you. Much too strong to fight the song I write for you. Atlantic blue, I'll be wrong and right by you. Atlantic blue, there was danger in your lands, in the changing winds, no angels in your sands. Atlantic blue, you're the strangest sin I am.
Thank you.
Is there any message that you hope your music gets across?
You know, I'm not one of those writers or performers that's really all about a message per se. I mean, I do have stories in my songs. I have messages. But I don't have one underlying one, I don't think. I don't think there's really... I like to talk about relationships, interpersonal relationships, and I like to sort of shed a new light on them. I like when somebody comes up to me and says, you know, I've never heard it put that way before. I've been thinking about this same situation for 5 or 6 years and you nailed it. You know, that's what it's about. Whether it's, you know, happy or sad or positive or negative, it's all, I think it's all positive because it's all communication. It's all interpersonal. But I don't want to get too heavy handed with that because my ultimate goal as an artist is to be an entertainer. I know when I go to see somebody and I'm entertained, it's because they're doing something I can't do and they're doing it well, and they, whether they are or not, they look like they're enjoying themselves and they take me somewhere else. And that's exactly what I want to do.
Michael's website at www.michaelholland.com is packed full of lots of goodies from his career, so I encourage you to visit him there. This is J.D. Doyle, and I'm getting ready to close this segment, and I'm doing so with the only song in this show Michael didn't write, but it's a pretty special song. And it's from a project I'm sure Michael counts as blessings he was involved in. And that was the release of a CD called The Maury Yeston Songbook. As a composer, Yeston has won and been nominated for a slew of Tony Awards, Golden Globes, Academy Awards, you name it. In 2003, a various artist compilation was released of his work, including songs from the shows Phantom, Grand Hotel, Nine, and Titanic, along with several songs Yeston picked to premiere on this album. And Michael got one of those world premieres. Here is Michael Holland singing Another Day in the Modern World.
It's another day in the modern world. There's a boy who's never seen you, and he passes by, but you catch his eye, and a spark ignites between you. If you meet him in the morning, and it lasts till evening, oh my friend, you've made a lucky find. Never mind tomorrow, it'll come without you. It'll come if you don't change his mind. Everything will be fine if you reach cloud nine. And a moment there with the two of you together. Not a grand romance, but a gentle dance. There's a bond, but not a tether. And you're with him in the morning, with him in the evening. And at times you'd least expect you'd find. Never mind tomorrow, never mind your lifetime. If today you know you can be kind, everything will be fine if you reach cloud nine. Today inside out, we have turned about forevermore. No surprise I'm lost in the modern world. No surprise I live in terror. When the only choice is to be alone or to risk a foolish error. But I needed you this morning,
mind again this evening. Didn't know if you'd be so inclined. Never mind tomorrow. I don't have so many, but today I'd rather not be blind. Everything will be fine. Everything will be fine. Everything will be fine when we reach cloud nine.